This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 737, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands and wearing masks and being cool.
Yo, what's up, Blastmaster KRS-One? This jam is kicking. Word. Yo, what up, D-Nice?
Yo, what's up, Scott Rock?
Yo, man, we chilling. This Funky Fresh Jam. I want to tell you a little something about us. We're the Boogie Down Production Crew. And due to the fact that no one outside there knew what time it was, we have to tell you a little story about where we come from.
South Bronx. The South, South Bronx. South Bronx. The South, South Bronx.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 737. I am Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
It is Josh Flanagan.
You know, we've only done like two shows since the start of the lockdown by ourselves.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, we had Ron on for so long doing G.I.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I consider those like guest appearances, but I see what you're saying. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Easier edit.
That's true. So there you go. It's all about making our lives easier. We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics, although I don't know what we're going to do next week. One of us picks the one we like the best and call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books in the week, the patron pick, some of the listener mail. Hopefully we have time for all that stuff this week. It'll be fun. Here's your spoiler warning. There's going to be spoilers. This is a review show. Use your head. Josh.
Yeah. Pick of the week goes to, and I'm not sure the proper order. It's either Marvel Snapshots, Captain America, or Captain America, : Marvel Snapshots, #1. Don't know.
That's it. That's according to the title page. That's it.
It's true. But the cover appears to say otherwise. Now,
and also, this has nothing to do with Marvel. So,
yes, that's true. There's no apostrophe. I thought Marvel's, they were.
It's the brand. It's the Alex Ross, Kurt Busiek brand.
Yeah, right. So I didn't know that much. I see that we have an Alex Ross cover here. I know that Kurt Busiek curated. He's credited as the curator of this series of books, which I guess have been coming out completely out of. I didn't know. Because I was sort of like looking up information on this book, and I realized that this was a thing. But what we have here is what I thought was ostensibly a Captain America story.
It's not.
By Mark Russell, who I don't know if listeners may have heard of him. And then art by, and I skipped over the artist's name as I was reading this. Like, this looks great. Oh, it's Ramon Perez. On art.
Last time you saw him on anything?
I don't know, but that's a treat. So, like, based on the cover and the title and what comics are like a lot, I had no expectations. I didn't know what it was. I literally thought I was just taking a flyer on a light week.
Right.
And as I kept reading, I was like, oh my God. And there's a... I don't tend to be like, well, I need to give a trigger warning, but I am going to give you a little warning. So you've had your second. There's a baby murdered on page 7.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is not the book I thought it was.
It's interesting. It's a mishmash of what your expectations are with a Mark Russell book and because it is. It includes very timely social commentary on the nature of inequality in society. You know, who knows? Comics are made ahead of time. Who knows how long ago this was done? But It does start off very seriously before returning very quickly to sort of familiar Mark Russell tone.
Yeah, he's getting better at that, I think. And sort of like living around, he can't get rid of his voice. And by the way, that's a strength. That's not really.
I don't want him to.
No, I don't either. And I think that there's probably places where it's more applicable than others.
I was a little shocked by the opening, and I'm not someone who gets upset about that stuff, obviously. But I was a little surprised at the murder and the way the murder happened. I was a little surprised.
Well, it was also sort of self-defense. There's a whole bunch of reasons. Go read the book. It's grim for sure. And such the extent, like, if I was editing this, I would probably say, tone this down somehow. Like, get to where you want to go, because it really is a thing that's kind of hard to get around. And every time those characters pop back up, you're like, you know. And he doesn't say they get over it, but it really is.
No, they clearly don't. They're sitting in silence at the dinner table.
It's rough.
Oh, well, the mad bomb is set off in Manhattan. Was something that happened in Marvel, you know, a long time ago. This is historically accurate. Mm-hmm. And people go crazy. And the interesting part about this is it takes place in the South Bronx. And so they're like at the edge of the blast field. So there, some people started going crazy and others didn't. One of them, including a mother who kills her baby, which,
because the baby's attacking her because they're both infected by the mad bomb, and she, whatever. The thing that got me is so that was really, I'm gonna just call that sort of a bellwether of like that, see where we're going, but really to start off and tell a story. And I'm gonna guess, I don't know when this is supposed to take place, but in the Bronx. Well,
it's the 80s.
Yeah,
they're in their 80s costumes.
So as a comparison to, it really is. It's a really wonderful question of like, they were always
seeing, 70s, actually.
You're always seeing superheroes in, you know, Manhattan doing all this stuff, and then just up there is certainly in the 70s and 80s was the, you know, decaying, blighted Bronx because of many policies, largely because of Robert Moses.
Well, specifically the South Bronx, because North Bronx is nice, but. Or at least at that time, you know.
Right.
But,
so, you know, if you've ever watched a hip hop documentary, when they talk about sort of where this comes out of and what that area was like and the sort of general hopelessness and malaise. And I thought, wow, it's bold to sort of put that in a story and call it a Captain America story. And then the other thing that that interested me, I really thought, you know, that shows a social awareness, certainly, mm-hmm. to be like, I'm going to do this. And that's a real thing. And the beginning, I don't remember his name, the main character kid.
Is it Felix?
Felix Waterhouse.
Yeah.
Maybe he read Cryptonomicon. Waterhouse. And, you know, he's talking about it. They talk about the fact that the landlords are instead of, you know, they're burning down the buildings, you know, because that's better than any sort of rent they can get on. So that's how they get in. That's a thing. That was a common thing. You know, and people, like anywhere, if you live in a war zone or wherever, you start to get used to it. I believe we all have a taste of that right now.
Felix being the main character here, who is a genius, clearly a genius, who works in his dad's electronics repair shop fixing TVs and other electronics. And
he's good with amplifiers more than anything else.
Right.
That's why you want to have the TK-421 modification. You can really feel the kick. Sorry. If that's I'm not going to explain that reference, but those of you who know, and it's funny. So then another thing happens that I thought was the thing that really put this over the top for me. And it's that, so basically he gets recruited by AIM and they give him a pitch and he's like, you know what? Sure. And so
I love AIM.
Yeah, no, AIM was great. This is a great AIM in this. I think if you gave Russell an AIM book, you give him 6 to 12 issues on it, you would have an amazing book.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be the best. Because, I mean, that's right in his wheelhouse, corporate sort of schmoozery and
overly corporate. I just love how they try to be normal, you know.
Yeah, and you know, Felix is a smart kid, bought it. You know, like he's like, all right, you know, this makes sense. I'm in a place with no hope anyway. You know, all that stuff. Anyway, when it all goes down, and you can read the story, I don't need to explain that part to you, Captain America and Iron Man show up, and you get Tony Stark swooping in to be like, I want to offer you a job. And I thought, you're going to go awry here, because it's the White Knight sweeping in to save the one, you know, standout kid. But then Mark Russell, in what I thought was whatever the opposite of tone deaf is, was, you know, having Felix go, no, that's not going to help this problem that I have to deal with. And, you know, I thought that was really, especially, I was going to say given the events of the day, but a lot of the sort of thinking that's going along and being amplified, and like, you know, like there's different solutions to this other than a rich person coming in and being like, let me give you a job so that you will be happy.
I mean, it's partially that, but it's most of that. His pitch is, let's build the future together. And the kid's right. Like, fuck the future. The present needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
You know, it's less about the job and more about all these, you know, guys with grand vision who want to build the future, but he's looking around his neighborhood seeing it literally falling apart, and he's like, I'm not even gonna get to the future. We need to fix the present right now.
You can't build the future on top of this. You know? Yeah. And then, you know, one bit more is, you know, he's sitting there having a heart to heart with Captain America, and Captain America's like, yeah, you're right. You know, like, he's like, you're not doing anything for these people, which goes back to, you know, if we're talking about Denny O'Neill, you know, I'm trying to remember the line, but in the Green Arrow, Green Lantern run, you know, the old black man's like, I see you doing things for the blue skins and the purple skins and the browns, you know, but what about my people? What about brown people? You know, and this is very similar to that, you know, where was it Green Arrow or Green Lantern? Which one of them? But like, he had nothing to say to that guy.
He was talking to Green Lantern.
Yeah.
I think. Because you can't punch your, he tells Cap, you can't punch your way out of this problem. You know?
Yeah.
And Cap's like, I'm really good at hitting things, which is, I thought was funny.
It's just like, it's nice. It's nice to see one of these characters who, while fictional, who you respect and, you know, who have a thing where, and you can see him admit to shortcomings and admit to, like, I do this thing, you know, but I could be doing better. Maybe this thing isn't really what's needed. I don't know. I just thought, you know, this was made, you know, at a minimum 3 months ago. So it was certainly before. Not before race was a conversation, but, you know, it's come to the forefront in the last month,
right?
You know, overtaking sort of everything else. But this was done before that, so it's, you know, it's, I don't want to say prescient, it's kind of prescient. But the timing on it was just really interesting. And on top of that, it was still entertaining. It was still beautifully drawn. I mean, Ramon Perez is one of our sort of premier generational talents, I think. And so when he shows up, it's a special thing. And also, as a one shot, you know, like, you go in, you read a comic book, you get out. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great issue. And you know, the surprise was a big part of that for me. Like, I just expected nothing.
Yeah, I thought I have the same reaction in terms of I read it because it was in the mix for Patron Pick. I wasn't planning on reading it, and then I was very pleasantly surprised by it. I mean, obviously, it should have been called Captain America. It should have been called Felix of AIM, Marvel Snapshots, but no one's going to buy Felix of AIM because Captain America's barely in it, and when he is, it's not really as a major factor in the story. But
That doesn't bother me, and it might be because I know what you're saying. Like, there are lots of readers who would, and there's lots of me who would had it not been what it was.
Sure. It was very, very good.
Yeah. So that covers up a lot of it.
I am going to need you to tell me about 5 years number 10, the final issue of this particular volume, because, I mean, I read it, but I don't know if it's a successful ending or not, because I'm not as well versed in the Terry Moore books. I can say from my perspective, from what this miniseries was built up to be from the last one, from the Strangers in Paradise 25 miniseries, is it seems to end rather abruptly, and I'm not sure satisfyingly.
Yes. I think that is probably correct. I was not unhappy or unsatisfied reading the book.
No.
Although, at the end, I thought, wait, is that it? And I actually thought it was issue 11 in my head. By the way, we have most of our issues we're talking about today are issue number 10. Not most, but several of them. At the end, and so I had to look it up, and I was like, oh, it's 10. Maybe that is the end.
Well, because it says it on the cover. It says final issue on the cover.
Yeah, I never look at the cover. Like, it's the thing I always sort of go past right away. But I looked it up, and it was, and I guess I should have looked at the cover. I think next time this happens, I'll look at the cover. I think that it was a really action-packed and interesting and funny issue, and then in about the last three pages, it was over.
Yeah.
And the huge problem they had all been fighting against this entire time
just seemed to go away.
Was solved in a panel with the narration. Yeah, our guys talked to their guys and they stopped doing it.
Yeah.
And
so I just want to back up for people. So I know we've talked about this book a lot, but in case people haven't read it. So in the last series, which was Strangers in Paradise 25, the 25th anniversary series, at the end of it, they discovered that there's this technology coming, that there's going to make this bomb, this Phi bomb is going to be created, and it's going to wipe out humanity because they have like a prophecy. So the whole point of this series was they had 5 years to stop it because it's going to happen in 5 years, hence the title of the book. And so all the characters from all of Terry Moore's books, Motor Girl and what's the sci-fi one? The literal Deus Ex Machina character in this book and Strangers in Paradise all get together to stop this thing with teaming up with these characters from myth to... It became very heady. And I think we spent a lot of this series just sort of hanging out with these characters so that the plot became kind of irrelevant. I know there was a lot of action in terms of like scientists yes. being smuggled around Russia and things, but it seemed like from the pacing of it, it was being plotted out for this long series because we weren't really plot heavy. And then so then when you get to the end of this and it's just, as you said, it all happens in a caption box. So I was just like, huh, well, that's a choice. I mean, I wasn't mad at it. And I always liked reading the book, even if I wasn't fully in on the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Because these Terry Moore books look like no other books that I read, and they're beautiful. So
in that sense,
I enjoyed it, but like I was a little disappointed by the way it wrapped up in a couple of pages.
I think that you're spot on is that it became more about hanging out with the characters. Not hanging out. I mean, there were stakes. There was danger.
Yeah,
because I don't want to make it sound like it's just people in a room. Like,
no, it wasn't.
This was super action packed. In fact, I don't know. He had bits of that in Strangers in Paradise, and it's not what that book people think that book is. Mm-hmm. But this was really kind of wall to wall action, car chases and shooting and you know,
stabbings,
Russian agents and all sorts of stuff like that. And it did get kind of lost the plot, but I think that when it came to the plot, I don't think he was playing to his strengths, Terry Moore. I think it was a good plot. It was a good idea. It was everything. But, like, it was a thing that was going on in the background. And I assume he's going through this and writing it. And, you know, like, I'm out of space. You know, and...
Which is funny because he's self-publishing and it can be as long as he wants it to be.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure that there are economic concerns about that. And it's
well, I mean, because I don't know if you kept reading past the end, but, there was a post-credit sequence. Yeah, so I assume he's setting up a... sequel.
Well, yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, it totally, the part when Julie showed up, and again, why can't I remember the name of her book? But
was it Echo? No, was it?
Might be. When she showed up, I thought, oh, that's really cool. I thought, I want to spend some time with her, with these people. You know,
it was Echo.
When she zaps the car chasing the little girl and the scientist, I thought, oh, there's some really cool stuff that they could do from here on because they've got this Captain Marvel character
right.
with them and another blonde woman. If I have to criticize everything,
I think she's brown haired, but doesn't matter. The way it's colored, there's no color in her hair.
It's black and white. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, there was a bit, and I was like, all these women look the same. I have no idea. I have no idea who any of them are. I was like, okay, Kachu is beat up. That's her. It got that much.
Tambi. And then somebody else. Yeah.
I mean, and I kind of just take that as part and parcel. Like Terry Moore is going to draw women who look like this. Frank Cho is going to draw butts. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, they both do those things well. Yeah, and but basically, like, I thought, oh, there's a lot of potential for stuff going forward, and I kind of wasn't ready for it to end, and then it ends really quickly. You want to talk about, I always bring back, like, when Ron was mad about killing Cyclops off screen, you know, like, right. This is, like, finishing that plot where you have biblical characters and end of the world, really off panel in one caption. I mean, it was so fast. I went, wait. And I went back and I read. I was like, did they just fix the problem? You know, it was, but at the same time, kind of cool, kind of ballsy. Like, yeah, that wasn't really the point. And if it wasn't so fun to read, it wouldn't have worked. But, and I don't even know if it did work, but I let it go.
It's funny because in a book in which you have like Rachel and Cleopatra's scroll and, supernatural sci-fi character, the hardest thing to believe is that these governments would back off their weapon development, which is not even shown as a, you know, not explored at all, but I guess you have to go with it. I feel like, I guess the series was more about these characters' anxieties and fears in the face of this problem and not so much the problem, even if that was not how it was built up to be.
Yeah.
You know, in the last series was like, we have to save the world. And it's like, oh, that's going to be an interesting story. And this is more about their fear of dying from this bomb than anything else.
You know what the tease of this book is for me? Is there is this background thing that's going on where Francine and Cachou had this family, and we've seen little bits of it, and it's all about Cachou just wanted to get back to that. And like, I want to get back to that. I really did want to see them together. Like, if there was like a comic book story about a day in their life and whatever's going on and it was low stakes or whatever, I want to read that. And I never got to. Like, I feel like there's this, and that's, to me, that's a very Terry Moore thing to be like, that's not our business. That's the thing that's going on over there. You know, that's because he's always referred to them as real people. Like, if you've ever heard him talk about them, you know, that story's over. That's them living their life away from this, which means away from us. And I get all that, but I do want to hang out with them for a little bit. I miss them, you know, in that way. And they got what they wanted, and that's really nice. And you want to see that, but it's kind of.
And he writes great characters. That's why you want to hang out with them.
Yeah, that's true.
And that, and again, I did not enjoy this. I enjoyed reading it. I enjoyed the whole series. It's just, it was interesting the way it ended up going. And I guess he's going to do more, which is...
I certainly hope so.
If the story's not over, there's still part of the scroll out there to cause
more
problems.
And he keeps building. You know, like, he's got himself a universe now. I don't know if he meant to do that, but he does now, and it's kind of cool. And you know, there's a lot of fun characters. Like, what's the deal with the little girl? Is she going to marry that Russian scientist, or is he going to bring up charges on her?
I liked her. She was great.
It's reverse statutory. It's a problem.
She was the most entertaining part of the story.
I do like that he committed to the fact that the scientist was never charmed. He never was like, oh, it's okay. He was like, get her the fuck away from me.
Yeah. Oh, she's adorable. It's like, no, she's a psychopath. I assume you did not read Green Lantern 80th Anniversary and 100 Page Spectacular.
I didn't, no.
It was good. All of these have been good, but
are they extra size? I see 100 page. Of course.
Yeah, they are long, but they're all short stories. You know, it's the same format as Robin and Catwoman, and I guess we're going to go through all the characters, which is good. It's been a nice way to look at their history. And I'm not going to go through all this again, but the first story was an Alan Scott story by James Tinney in the fourth and Gary Frank, which was really good. About Alan Scott, you know, James Robinson made Alan Scott, revealed him to be gay in the New 52. And so what they're doing now is they're reinserting that into his history. So here he visits the mother of the man who was on the train with him when it crashed, when he got his power. And there's a lot here about repression, you know, in the 40s, which it was good. You know, it's a short story, and there's a lot of it's done through the art, the terrific Gary Frank art about how he... We see him talking to the mother while they're flashing back to him and the man, and it's never explicit. It's all in glances and looks and longing. And Gary Frank's really good at drawing facial expressions, so it's all very well captured. It made me really want a 1940s Alan Scott book because he's the best. There was a Jeff Johns, Ivan Reis, Hal Jordan story, which was funny. Hal Jordan crashes in some desert landscape, and the ring is basically running out of power. He doesn't have his lantern. It's all over for him. He's gonna lose his protection from the atmosphere in any moment, and so he only has enough power to send out three messages, like three holograms. One he sends to the Corps asking for rescue and telling them he's, you know, been honored to serve with them. One to Batman where he says, you know, you taught me a lot. We didn't get along, but you taught me a lot. And the third one to Carol, and then, you know, he loses power, he loses his protection, and realizes he can breathe, and realizes he crashed in Las Vegas. But he just didn't know where he was, because he was, like, knocked out, so he thought he was on an alien world, so he thought he was about to die. And it was funny, and then at the end, like, Justice League's making fun of him for the message he sent to Batman. It was a sweet story, and then it had, like, a nice funny button at the end, which I liked. Yes. I'll jump ahead. There was a Cullen Bunn, Doug Monkey, Sinestro story, which was good. There was a Denny O'Neill, which might be his last work. Mike Grell story, Green Lantern, Green Arrow team-up story, which we just mentioned in a previous discussion. You would like, I think, the Kyle Rayner, Ron Mars, Daryl Banks story.
Oh, nice. That's the team, man.
Yeah, so you might want to check that out. That was a good one. And then I'll jump ahead. There was a Guy Gardner one, which was I liked. I actually overall liked this. There was a Dwayne McDuffie's wife wrote a story with Criss Cross that took place basically in the animated world, which was it was a team up between Jon Stewart and Hawkgirl. And then there was one. It ended with a Jessica Cruz story and then a Simon Baz story, which were fine. But there was one in the middle by Robert Venditti and Rafa Sandoval that was middle-aged Hal Jordan, Jon Stewart, and Kyle Rayner, clearly who had retired, meeting for an annual drink, waiting for Guy Gardner to show up. But clearly, it becomes clear over the story that Guy Gardner's never going to show up because he's dead. And it was good, but also kind of funny. Kyle Rayner does not... He looks like a douchebag.
I can see
a middle-aged douchebag. But overall, it was good. I think these have been really good, these anniversaries.
What have you liked the best? Which one do you think worked the best?
Well, I think Robin was the best, but Robin's my favorite. You know. But Catwoman was probably the least in terms of overall quality, although it did have that Ed Brubaker story. But I thought this one hit pretty high, pretty high average.
I'm guessing it just then it largely would depend on what your affinity to those characters are.
That plus the creative teams. I thought the creative teams were better on this book and Robin than Catwoman overall.
Right.
You know, you had Gary Frank and Jeff Johns and Ivan Reis and Danny O'Neill and Mike Grell and Ron Mars. I mean, you had really good people on this book.
Cool.
I enjoyed it. It was fun.
The one of the other books was Empire Avengers, number zero.
This is Al Ewing and Pepe Larraz. This is the prelude to Empire, which is the big Marvel event. Putting big in quotes because no one... even realize this is about to happen. There was an issue right before quarantine, and I don't remember anything about what happened in that issue because that was 10 years ago. I actually really like this issue against all odds. I read it because I was like, all right, let's just see what this is going to be all about. And
see, it's really their big summer event.
Yeah,
I've never Empire. Heard of it. And I mean that's fine. I'm not even in a place where I probably would hear about it anymore.
It's very. First of all, Pepe Larraz is one of my favorite new artists. We've talked about him for the last
also,
couple years.
Also, super fun to say his name.
Yeah.
It has a nice... Pepe Larraz!
This is very old school Marvel. So the basic premise is that the Kree and the Skrull, after 1,000 years of being enemies, have teamed up to take over the universe. So it opens up with Tony dreaming about the Kree-Skrull War. And then in the course of the story, they run into the Swordsman, the old, you know, one of the old Avengers who had died back then, who has now been resurrected by the technology that the Kree and the Skrull had on the moon. So it harkens back to those old classic Avengers stories with the Kree and the Skrull. I mean, Kree-Skrull War is one of the seminal Marvel stories. And so here the twist is they realize, why are we fighting each other? If we team up, no one can stop us. So they're... This issue ends with their armada on the way to Earth. And there's a big twist that I saw annoyed some people. I don't know how I feel about it yet.
Feel free to spoil this for me.
I'm giving you the double spoiler warning. We gave you the first one in the beginning of the show. So at the end, so this issue is all about the Avengers realizing they have to, it's up to them to stop this invasion. Like, you know, there's some discussion amongst the ranks what they should do. And eventually Tony gives the rousing speech of, that ties into the first issue of Avengers. Like, you know, this is what we're here for. This is it's a day like any other. No other single hero can do this. We have to team up and do this together. So they have the rousing Avengers Assemble speech, and we see the Armada coming. We zoom in, zoom in, and zoom in, and see one of the ships is the Fantastic Four ship, and the Fantastic Four are flying in with the Kree and the Skrull. So people are like, oh God, it's Civil War. It's Avengers versus X-Men again. Now it's Avengers versus Fantastic Four, and who knows if that's what it is or not. We'll see. But there's like...
Well, at the end of the next issue or in the middle of it, there's going to be a panel that said they talked and it was all fine.
Right. They talked it out. It was cool. We're going to hang at the beach.
Don't hang at the beach.
There's a lot of tie-in issues. There's a checklist at the end. I'm not going to obviously read most of them, but...
Who's driving this? Is this an Al Ewing?
It's Al Ewing, writer of The Immortal Hulk, which we read for a while, but stopped reading and people really liked.
Like, he's obviously got some talent, but like... that book didn't know when to rein it in. It's weird. I don't know who the premier names are anymore. Like
there aren't any.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. I remember if God, that's probably a decade.
Not from a talent perspective, but from a influence and sales perspective. There's no names that really drive sales.
That's
really
true. That's
unless
true.
You there's a magical combination of name and property that could drive sales, but like, you know, it's like almost like it's just Al Ewing's turn, you know. That's really what it is.
Yeah, well, I guess to my own bias, I still think of him as a, well, who's this guy, you know, how does he get to do it? But I you know, he's been writing Avengers. It's not like he's probably a veteran at this point. He's probably been in the industry for 10 or 15 years, you know, and I'm not giving him that credit. But yeah, I guess I haven't read the book that made me love him.
Well, you really liked, we both really liked Immortal Hulk for a while.
I did, but there was a certain point where I was like, it felt like it was going to be a story, and instead it turned into, you know, I don't know what issue they're on now, but it's still going, and I know that it's an ongoing, and that's the point.
They just announced it's about to end.
Well, that was too long. you stopped reading it, right?
Oh, yeah, I did. I think we both stopped reading it at like the same time.
Yeah, and it was just like, whatever it was that had drawn me in at first had just worn out its welcome, I think. And again, that's comics. That doesn't really speak to the writer. But it doesn't make me excited to read the book. But you liked it. That's good.
I hesitate. I kind of want to tell you to read this, only because it feels very old school Marvel.
Well,
If
my reason for not reading this is that I don't like what the title looks like and I don't really have an affinity or otherwise for the writer, you know, I'm coming into it with the same place I was on Deceased.
Right.
You know, it's a dumb title and I don't really know anything about the writer.
No, I'm not vouching for this.
I know.
Event. This event might be terrible, but I think this opening prelude issue, this issue zero, was a lot of fun. Okay. Now, occasionally does it veer a little into a little too much territory, especially with Tony Stark. I think that's a problem with a lot of writers. Yeah. I think, you know, they're all trying to do Robert Downey Jr. and it doesn't always necessarily work.
It's been 12 years, Tony.
So yes, occasionally it does do that. But I think for the most part, I was really pleasantly surprised by reading this. Like I don't know what my pick of the week would have been this week, and I'm glad I didn't have it. But I can't say this wouldn't have been in the conversation.
All right, that's cool. That's good.
And I'm not saying everyone needs to read Empire or everyone needs to read all 35 titles that are in the checklist, but I'm saying this issue, harkening back to the Kree-Skrull War, harkening back to the Swordmaster, mm-hmm. Swordsman? Swordmaster, Swordman. Jacques Duquesne.
The
Swordsman, the guy in the purple helmet with the mustache and sword.
Who was Clint Barton's brother? What was he? He was the...
The other guy.
He wasn't the Swordsman.
No, this is the guy who trained Clint. He was
at the circus.
Yeah.
Okay. You're right.
He was one of those Avengers that came on with, you know, at one point early on.
I always liked him.
Yeah. So he shows up.
Really like the Avengers who like had like medieval weaponry. Like, that was a thing.
you need a trebuchet Avenger.
Maybe that felt like more realistic. Like, you know, yeah. I'm usually not drawn to the fantasy aspects. It's like, what if you put this guy in here who's just real good at something? And that's our whole patron power thing.
So, anyway, I was pleasantly surprised. I think if you felt like checking this out, it'd be an interesting discussion. But, or not a discussion, but it'd be interesting to see what you think of it, is what I'm saying.
Okay, I will check it out. Trick shot.
But
He was trick shot.
Trick shot. It could totally blow up in our faces, but we'll see.
All right.
Let's take a quick break and talk about the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy.
They deserve
those
it.
People help the show go. They keep the engine running. They're very generous with their time and money. We appreciate them. As we mentioned before, we had a stretch goal for the barbecue, returning the quarterly barbecue video show, which you're going to see the first one on our YouTube page in a couple of weeks, our very first barbecue one. But we had a new stretch goal. That's for the G.I. Joe Corner Show, the show to be named later. If you want us to talk about G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, the television show, the cartoon, that's our next stretch goal over at patreon.com/ifanboy.
It's a risk, because a lot of them will be like, I do want that. And a lot of them will be like, I don't want that. So it could go either way.
I don't even know if we want that.
That's an excellent point, perhaps one of the most important ones.
I don't even know if I have time for that.
I don't.
Then there's also our t-shirt store.
Did we say that would be weekly?
We did not. That's why in the script it says weekly, monthly, We don't know. We have not decided.
Let's go on the record here. We've not made that decision.
No, we've made no promise other than the show will exist at least monthly. At fanboy.threadless.com is our merch store. It's not exactly accurate to say our t-shirt store, but it's our merch store. It's primarily t-shirts, but there's lots of merch there. We have our 8 designs. A fanboy logo, her and Pick a Thick podcast ratings. If one is Electro, GDAT, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters, and Stay Home and Read Comics. And as we told you last week, our Stay Home and Read Comics donation, because a portion of all those sales, 50% of all of our income from that, is going to go to the Comic Book United Fund, and that's happening July 1st. Now, we'll donate past that time, but if you want to get into the first donation, the big donation, that's going to be on July 1st. So you can check that out there. Also, you can get masks. You can get kid masks, all the crazy dystopian, depressing stuff that's going on. You can get the masks. At least you can do it with style. If you see Jimski on Instagram wearing the Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters mask, you see why that doesn't make some sort of sense in this crazy world.
Do you ever project out to the future? You know how like the 80s come back and people dress like that or whatever, and then thinking like 50 years people are going to wear masks as an affectation if they're not required to do so already all the time, or if there's an Earth. But let's just, like, there will be a moment in time, because you're seeing the advertising change from like, here's these safe things, to making it a fashion accessory, which approve of, because that just leads to more use of them. But, you know, like, it is going to become an affectation someday.
Well, I'm just waiting to see it on like the runway.
Yeah.
You know, like, here's your mask for the next
season. You're constantly watching runway shows.
Well, obviously I'm.
People don't know that about you. You love high fashion.
I keep up on high fashion. new designs we're working on, but for now we're happy with these designs. Stay Home and Read Comics again. Portion of all those sales go to Comic United Fund. Thanks to everybody who buys any of the merch. Josh, you have shirts coming. Do they arrive yet?
Soon. I got a notification. I ordered like a bunch. I did offer my children to get some shirts of ours, and they were like, we don't want those. And so I had to buy them other shirts, which cost more. And so, like, they've got, I don't know, this Threadless has gotten much more complicated since I used it a lot. So they're coming from different places, is the point.
I think you just need to buy them shirts and say, these are your shirts.
Yeah.
This shirt has your father on it.
Yeah, but they're my kids. So if I did that, they'd be like, I'm not wearing that. And you're not winning that. You know, because I would have done that. I was like, I'm not doing that. You told me to. Forget it.
Fanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out directly via PayPal. We used to, you know, send the plea out to any eccentric billionaires out there, and we haven't done that in a while. You know, times are weird. The stock market's up and down. Who knows where you need to park your cash? If you're an eccentric billionaire who thinks it'd be funny to donate lots of money to a podcast, that'd be, you know, there you go. Fanboy.com/support.
I tell you what, too.
Available.
If an eccentric billionaire comes along and throws 250, 500 million, $1 billion our way, we will donate half of that to charity.
Yes.
That is our pledge right now.
Yeah.
For any...
100% we will.
For any seven-figure plus donations.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll half right away. We'll spread that around.
Yeah. So there you go.
And I will drive it there in my Porsche.
Think about that, eccentric billionaire.
How good I would look in that Porsche. You're thinking, I've been listening to Josh all this time. There's sort of an implicit sadness behind him. You can get rid of that right now.
You can help someone today. Just pennies on the dollar for you. fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find the links to our books, Blood Books, and our general Amazon link. And thanks to everyone who does all of the above. You do help the show go on. You help us buy new equipment. You help make the time and the effort worth it away from our families and jobs and things. And I do appreciate that, especially you eccentric billionaires who could really make the time worth it.
I'm just saying, having driven a late model turbo Porsche, it's a joy machine.
You want to turn this frown upside down?
That's the noise I made. And, I could see you getting addicted to that. Not an option right now. I know, Connor, I know that you have sworn off the digital ones. But what they've turned into, I'm talking about Batman Gotham Knights number 10, what they have turned into is this sort of like short story anthology.
Sure.
By interesting creators. So this week we had John Arcudi writing a story, and Andy Clark on art, and the surprise, Dave Stewart on colors. Letters by Marshall Dillon. He should not be forgotten. Marshall Dillon, who is the combination of two Texas football teams.
Yeah, but also like it was a TV character.
Oh, yeah, that too. Good name. You know, and we had talked a while back, and I never read it, but Brian Hill did a detective story, and you were like, this is good. It was just a one-off sort of detective story, and that's what these are turning into. So this was a sort of mystery murder that happened in Gotham, and Batman has to go figure it out, and he ends up going to a wild animal sanctuary, and he goes after the guy, but it turns out that the wife you know, is the one who's responsible, and she releases lions on them, and he has to fight lions. And the reason that he figures it out is because he smells her perfume and he knows it's a very expensive perfume. Mm. It's just like Silver Age-y Batman mystery stories.
I read the last couple of, after you talked about the Russell ones,
yeah.
And then I read something else you said to read. They were fine.
Yeah, I like that they're short. I think they're the stories are, I think, 8 pages a piece. And you know what's funny is that I was when I was thinking about what I was about to say about this. You know, the 100-page spectaculars, I like the idea of it, but like it's a really big time investment to go through. And, you know, usually with those things, there's a couple of them that are good and there's a couple that aren't. I like, you know, there's like 2 short stories I get to read. And so they're not the best stories on earth, but they're interesting and they're not like one thing. If this was all like a continuous story of what was in the first couple, I'd be fine with it. But I look at the names and I tend to not mind dipping in if I see something that's interesting.
That's
and they're
fair.
Fun for that.
Yeah.
Real quick, John Constantine, Hellblazer, number 10, a lot of 10s, it was the next sort of story in this thing, and man, I don't know what I did to deserve the return of this character and this stuff, and by the way, I do hate that he is also the villain, because I have a problem trying to reconcile that, and maybe they'll do it in the story. But either way, you know, Simon Spurrier, Aaron Campbell, and again, with the colorist who you wouldn't think would be there, Jordi Belair, you know, doing, you know, old-timey Hellblazer stories from Vertigo that are fun. This was a really interesting mermaid story.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I've been loving this book. And the first 5, 6 pages, I was like, this is a lot of talk about fish. I don't know if I'm going to like this book. Mm-hmm. Like, is this the first issue I don't like? And then by the end of it, I was like, fuck, that was good.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, they pulled it around because it was a thing where at first, like, did I miss something? What's going on? And then it really tied back together. And
it did a great job of social commentary of the current situation in England and Brexit and the fishery problem and how there's fishing communities all over the world who are angry about the other taking their livelihood when a lot of the problem is they've overfished and there's no stock left. And
again, in one panel, somebody's like, well, what if it's this? And they all shout him down. So
I think we've overfished and we got to buy our fish from Iceland now. Shut up. It's the French.
Yeah.
pretty explicit mermaid sex scene. Like it was really good. And then the ending was shocking and kind of gross, but
also that's classic John. You know, he kind of doesn't care.
No, I mean like that he'd been using her to sell, he'd been selling her body in the market.
Yes, yes, yes.
I was like, ugh.
But also the way that John like just was like, yeah, that'll come back. You'll be fine. Don't worry. And then you sort of see not the case.
But it was really good. You know, it was just the amount of horror you want with social commentary, with realism, with terrific art. It was really good.
I haven't put this on the list because I want to get through the show, but we're not ignoring Jimmy Olsen. It was fantastic again, but I tell you the same thing we told the last 10 issues that we did.
Yes, when did she left? I'm sure we'll talk about the last one. Thor 5.
Yeah, Thor 5.
Donny Cates and Nick Klein. I think this is Nick Klein's first issue drawing it.
No, I think he's been doing it. Has he not?
Not the whole time, no.
Anyway, what do you think of this?
I like it. It's weird, but I like it.
Yeah.
Donny Cates clearly has an affinity for stories about the darkness coming to envelop us all. That's sort of what he's done in like his Cosmic Ghost Rider Venom stories. And I get it, man.
Yeah.
The darkness is coming to envelop us all. But
it's pretty zeitgeisty. Yeah. I liked that the villain reveals seemed very simple at first. And I was like, oh, Gore's back. And then it wasn't what it was. I think that's a neat little
trick. I'm glad that was what happened, because at first I was like, oh, yeah. I don't like that. But then it was revealed it wasn't
Gore's. I really liked, to give Nick Klein some credit, when Thor sort of gets to the place wherever the evil is, you know, this M.C. Escher-like construct that everybody's sort of, you know, or reminds me of like the the bit at the end of Interstellar, you know, just this sort of otherworldly place, you know, that doesn't exist in our physics. It's really big. The only, my one problem is that I'm getting this story mixed up in my head with what was happening over in Valkyrie,
mm-hmm.
Which is very similar. Like, we had a Thor who was changed and overtaken in that, and we sort of got this because he's, and I couldn't remember. I was like, oh, right, now he's Galactus's herald, and that's mm-hmm. why he looks like this. And I, for some reason, it really bothers me
right.
When they call Galactus by his first name.
Galen.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't like that. I don't want him to have a first name. I don't like it when they called Kramer Cosmo. I don't like this. That's minor. But
so one thing I did like about this issue, and people might not like this, but I did, was that it's a very comic booky thing to do. And we've talked about the fact that the Thor books can't be tethered to Jason Aaron's run. They have to break free and do a new thing and mm-hmm. have that exist on its own. So here, as a result of these cosmic shenanigans, Thor's destiny has been changed. Time has changed. So he's no longer necessarily on that path anymore.
Love that. Jason Aaron set out. That's exactly what needs to happen.
So let that book exist on its own
mm-hmm.
and let them tell new stories that aren't shackled to it. And shackled sounds bad because it is, because it stifles creativity, but those books are still there. You can enjoy them. Now you've got a Thor who is not necessarily going to, you know, no writer wants to write someone else's story. So it's good.
If you know the end, I mean, it's the same thing. You could look at Dark Knight Returns. You know, right. and just say, God, that is one of the best stories I've ever read. Every time I read it, it's great. I don't want to know that that is the end. I don't care.
Or it can be if you want it to be. That's the whole right. point. Like, yeah. if you're a big fan of it, you can say, that's my ending. And if someone really loves Jason Aaron's run, or like, I really love it, that can be your ending for Thor 2. But also, now we can do many different things, which is the way yes. comics have to be in these,
yes.
in the way that these work. But I really love like reading that, there's been this thing has snaked through time and has destroyed your destiny, breaking your fate. I really like that. I like this look of Thor. I hope they don't go back to the missing arm, missing eyeball look.
Yeah.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. Any patron can vote. This week was a close race for most of the period. We didn't have a blowout winner like we've had almost every time since we've been back.
It's true.
But the winner was another Image number one, because that seems to be the strongest lobby in the patrons is... That Texas Blood number one, Image Comics, written by Chris Condon. Art by Jacob Phillips, who you may have recognized from Criminal, who is the colorist on Criminal and the son of, I don't want to say Steve Phillips. Why do I want to say Steve Phillips?
Sean.
Steve Phillips was the old general manager of the Mets. That's where my brain went. This is a crime story, and I am super curious to see what Josh thought of it.
If I had an idea about where this was going or what this was a little more clearly, or that there was a slightly stronger hook, this might have been pick of the week.
Interesting.
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the tone. It was very much like living in the world of No Country for Old Men.
Mm-hmm.
I like the small town sheriff and his relationship with his wife. I like all the stuff that goes along with it, the fact that it's not a heroic character. I love the fact that I don't know if this kid's doing his dad style, or if it's just that's what he draws like because of how he grew up and who he is, but I'm super impressed by the art. Super incredibly impressed by the art. I mean, these are real people. There's no superheroes. His acting, his storytelling, you know, I don't know if he's getting notes. I don't know what it is. But for a guy who I've never seen do anything except colors, that is a hell of a debut in terms of art. I liked that there was a supernatural thing, but it turned out it was a dream. Now, I don't like seeing dream sequences, but I like zombies even less. You know, there was basically... With a little more seasoning, I think that this would have been better, but I really enjoyed it.
I'm mixed on it. I thought it was enjoyable. I thought it was more enjoyable when it was like not a one shot, but like almost an anthology, because I thought maybe we were done with this story, but according to the end, you know, we're going to continue on with the sheriff, mm-hmm. which isn't necessarily a bad thing. So we're on the 70th birthday of this, you know, small county Texas sheriff who has to deal with problems in the city. And it's not like this one story. It's almost like he's just going through his day, and there's a characters in the background that keep popping up, and you know that eventually that's gonna what's gonna come to a head, and it does. The art I thought was good at times and not good at others.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not bad. We've definitely seen worse. We've seen worse from bigger publishers, but clearly, you know, I don't want to say somebody early in their career because I don't know how old he is, but or how much he's drawing he's done. But it was, I thought sometimes inconsistent, but not necessarily bad. There was one sequence I had a lot of trouble following. I could not figure out what was going on. So page 7 on your digital reader here, with the scene where the sheriff's on the, he's on the phone in his car.
Yeah. Yeah. I had that. I caught that.
The joke was that he never calls his wife on the phone. He uses his radio, and the dispatcher is always pissed off at him. And so he's talking on the radio to his wife, but then we see the phone and her face is on it, which would imply that she's either calling him or talking to him. And then someone yells at him for using the radio. He says, I'm talking to Martha right here. And, but it's now he's on a cell phone instead of the radio. Like it didn't make sense. I think that's an error.
I think that panel 3 is an error.
The mechanics of who he's talking to and what device switched in the middle of the scene.
Yep.
And it really confused me. I didn't know what was going on.
You're right. I had that same thing, but it, you know, to the other side, like, that didn't really affect the
It's not a huge plot point.
No,
it's just a throwaway scene. He's talking to his wife, but I was like, wait a minute. What's who too bad, talking too? To?
Because it's a nice, like, I'd forgotten about the specific of it because it's a nice comment. I always like when you have this character and then you see the other side of their life. You know, mm-hmm. like, I always think of Fargo. I love Marge's husband in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they are together, and then you know she leaves and she goes to become a different person, but you know that's in the background. Or we just watched we watched Misery recently.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the sheriff or the police officer and his wife, they're like a great part of that movie.
I don't remember that at all. I remember
they're both actors who you would know. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who they are off the top of my head, but that was like maybe the best part of that movie was the way that, you know, sort of they interacted through the whole thing. And this is a little bit of that. Just one of those tropes that I really enjoy.
I just want to reiterate, I did enjoy this.
Yeah.
I didn't love it, but I didn't dislike it either. I thought it was solid and I'm looking forward to seeing how it progresses.
And I thought it was pretty strong. Like, you know, the dialogue was really good. The sense of place, I know what you're saying about that sequence, and you're totally right. But you know, the other, like being in that convenience store, I know that Jacob Phillips lives in the UK.
Well, the writer's from New Jersey.
Yeah, and he's not even from Texas. And I thought, you know, and it was very much. I think if I had to knock it for anything, it was very much a fictional movie version of this. You know, No Country for Old Men or Hell or High Water.
Mm-hmm.
Like that terrific kind of thing. But even if it's a fictional place, it's not a place I don't enjoy being in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as a debut, I do wonder, I'm trying to think of like a musician who, you know, if Kurt Cobain's daughter came out with an album and it sounded just like Nirvana, you'd be like, well, I don't know what that's about. Jacob Phillips has that to deal with a little bit, but also maybe not. You know, if that's the school that he comes from, because that's the guy he knows, there's a lot worse things to imitate. But because he does the colors for the other book, because Sean Phillips does his own letters, it looks like an Ed Brubaker book, and maybe that gives you a feeling of familiarity, but it's gonna hinder him and his brand unless he just wants to take over what his dad was doing.
And I think that ultimately could be part of the problem, is that it looks enough like Criminal but it's not Criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Condon wrote a solid book, but he's not Ed Brubaker. Do you know what I mean?
So, yes, like, absolutely. Like I said, it's not seasoned enough.
Exactly like the other book that's, you know, excellent and like the top of its class. Mm-hmm. It's gonna pale in comparison. And yeah. So that's, you know,
I think there were a lot of technical things in here that were well done. The fact, the sort of way that we weren't spoon-fed anything, which is something that a lot of people do. The most sort of amateurish thing in here is the one page retelling of the story of Walt, you know, is the dream that he had basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's this wall of text. But it was actually written pretty well, so I kinda got through it. But, you know, the whole thing about the clues and leading up to, you know, the casserole dish and getting it back and then the shot of the thing, like, that was all pretty, it's pretty good structure. And it wasn't spoon-feeding me. And it was, you know, it, I was in the place that they created, I think, really well. So I liked that part of it. But I think we agree.
Let's do ratings on it.
Ratings.
Out of 5, I'm going to give it a 3.
I'm going to give it a 4.
All right. So you're sticking with it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how it goes, where it goes from here.
I mean, especially pilots are always hard, so.
Yeah, especially with the cliffhanger, I'm not sure. Not cliffhanger, but the ending of the story. I'm curious to see what happens next. All right, so also, patreon.com/ifanboy, you can give it the $5 higher level and get your own superpower live on the show. Josh, take it away.
Matthew Rosenhagen has the ability to return paper photos and documents to their original condition.
Hmm.
So, you know, any sort of old documents that are faded or torn or yellowed, he can return them to mint condition. Now, obviously, right away, you can see a market application of that.
So if he went to the Library of Congress or to the National Archives, he could go, like, find the Constitution and and return it to, like, as it was written originally.
The day it was made. Hmm. Now, do you want him to do that? Is he the George Lucas of documents? Is
kind
he
of.
Going to? Is he
Those
going?
Documents are fading.
Is he going to Is he going to flood the comic book market with pristine issues from the Golden Age?
It's a very lucrative market.
That's what I'm
now,
saying.
Now the question is: does that mean it's original condition? If it's a Rosenhagen, refresh, does that change its value?
I think that depends on how he.
What is the nature of? Of an artifact, if it's in its original condition, but it's not, it's been
changed. That's one application of it. But mm-hmm. for example, if you have a box of old family photos,
sure,
and they've faded and you can't see them, or you know, you're trying to read old records, like if you're going, you know, like if you go to ancestry.com or whatever, and you can see the logs from when your parents, you know, got to Ellis Island, and you can't read it because it's all faded. You bring that back. You bring those photos, you know, from the 50s and 60s that are all weird colored and yellow back, or film,
right?
You know, all that stuff. So there's a good application. There's a bad application, necessarily bad.
Jim Miller can refill any glass receptacle. So, you know, I'm at the end of my water cup. Jim Miller could just pick it up and refill it to the top again.
I very nearly had a beverage-based idea. By the way, I thought of mine the moment I started talking, and I had been drinking my beverage and thought, what about something about a beverage?
So you just look around your office, and whatever you see is where the power comes
from. Well, I'm looking at a copy of Fantastic Four 45 on the wall, and I was like, you could spiff that guy.
Fix that right up. Yeah, like it works with anything. So, like, you know, he doesn't have to spend a lot of money on alcohol. He can just keep refilling up bottles of alcohol or wine or whatever, beer.
Does Jim have a problem?
he could. It's a lot cheaper. But also not just alcohol, any glass receptacle. So if you buy, you know, you can still get glass milk bottles from some dairy.
So it has to be glass, though.
Yes, it has to be glass. Hmm. Not plastic.
There's a place
But if you pour if you pour liquid into a glass, you can then refill it.
Right. So if you can take it out of its plastic container.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dairy here that does you know, dairy stuff, and they put them in glass bottles. Well, they've had to change to glass bottles because they're not returnable now.
Uh-huh.
It's really good milk.
What is dairy stuff?
Like, you know, like creamer and milk.
I know, they do dairy stuff for dairy.
Is that an incorrect statement?
No, it's just funny.
I mean, they do beverages from the milk family. I bought coffee creamer. And it was amazing. Like, it was like, I was like, this is, it's great. But it, because it's so sort of local and fresh, like, it went bad in like 2 days. I'm like, I don't know how I get
that's
through.
That's the problem with dairy.
I don't know how I get through a quart of coffee creamer in 3 days.
Yeah. Whenever I buy the local dairy here in outside of LA, it's always like, we got to drink this milk.
Yeah. I don't want that milk that fast. It's too much dairy.
Somebody make a cake because I got a ton of milk to drink.
We did.
Exactly. So there you go. Patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can get your superpower live on the show. Do we have time for an email?
Let's do one. Let's do Greg. I like Greg.
Greg from Jersey. One thing I've noticed about the pandemic, and first of all, this email from Greg came in the middle of the pandemic when comics weren't coming out.
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks ago.
As a context. No, it was more than that. Okay, comics have been out for a couple weeks. It came out in the middle of the situation where there was no comics coming out. So that's your context.
Okay, but still.
Greg from New Jersey. One thing I noticed about the pandemic is I haven't missed reading weekly comics nearly as much as I thought I would. Sometimes getting a big digital stack on Wednesday felt like a burden, and not spending a decent amount of money on comics every week has been nice. So as I decide what makes the most sense after the quarantine, I have to ask, what do Connor and Josh love about weekly comics? What, if anything, do you miss about reading weekly comics or comics every week? Greg is exactly the person the comic industry fears.
Yeah.
The fear is that when you weren't getting them, you'd be like, well, why am I doing this?
I mean, the business is built on a lot of momentum.
Yeah. It's yes.
But so let's take that out though, and you know, talk about, we can talk about weekly comics and the cases and the drawbacks. You know, I think he'd mentioned price and money, and I think that that's sort of a constant. You either, sometimes though, when you look back, you know, what a week of comics costs now, it is not insignificant. You add that up. It really is. For the time spent, you have to really appreciate the medium. How's that?
Enjoy them. You've got to be able to getting the enjoyment out of it, because it's not cheap.
Yeah. And it's not like a long, you know, $4 for an issue you're going to read through in 5 minutes is, you know, and then there's a bunch of others. So, you know, it's not like you're going to be like enjoying this thing over and over necessarily.
Yeah, I'd venture that most people, I know that some do, but I'd venture that most people are not rereading their books. They're not reading them over and over and over again.
And also, I want to say that this is not, I don't think comics are unfairly priced. Given the amount of craftsmanship and stuff that goes into them, I think that what we're really seeing is an effect of economies of scale, is that there's just not enough of them to make them cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, if you want high quality people working on them, people demand high quality stories and art and coloring and production, and that's not cheap.
No, but there's also the very small market who's going to buy them. So, you know, that's you're all taking a bigger bite of it. If 1 million people bought each issue of a comic book, it wouldn't cost so much because they'd be making more money revenue overall.
Sure.
So there's that. Okay, getting that out of the way.
So what do you like most about reading weekly comics?
Now, I think I am actually more of a weekly reader at heart than you, which is odd because you're more of a TV person like that. Anyway, We were just talking about, you know, the 80-page or the 100-page whatevers. The fact that it's an 80th anniversary with 100-page, and I'm used to 80-page giants. Anyway.
Right, I get you.
I don't like to read too much at once, you know, of a thing. I don't necessarily want to read a trade paperback in one chunk.
Mm-hmm.
I probably will, but I really like, this is part of my comics, how I've been reading them. You know, you read this one for a little while and there's this moment of what happened before, and then you get back into it, and then you know, oh right, and then you get build up, and then it's wait for next week, and there is this, or next month or whatever, but there is something sort of fun and satisfying about that I don't know that just has to do with when we grew up and how, but I like that sort of putting the light on the thing, rediscovering it, being invested in it, and then sort of having to wait for the next time it comes out, you know, especially if it's really good. If it's not, then it feels like a drag. But it was like, do you remember when we get everything on TV, we get all the in-demand stuff in one big chunk. Here's the season of this show right away all at once. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was when Hulu was doing 11, whatever, 23.
The Stephen King show.
The Stephen King show. You know, we had to wait week by week, and it was so much more fun, you know, and we were all talking about it, like the new episode would come out, we would get excited, you know, because the opposite of that is this glut of everybody watches the show that comes out, Stranger Things comes out, everybody watches it in 4 minutes, and they talk about it for the next week, and then next thing another comes out, like, you get to stretch out the experience of the thing that you like.
Right.
And I think there's something really powerful to that the comics offer you.
Well, there's a community around it.
Yes. That's, you know, a good point,
there's,
too.
There's not like a community around novel reading, because books come out and if you're really excited, you buy it when it comes out. But maybe you buy it a year or 10 years later. You know, you read it on your own. It's a very personal experience, and as opposed to comics, which is a very communal experience. So.
And it's fun to talk about novels with other people who like the same thing, but it's very difficult to stay on the same schedule, which makes it a problem.
And so TV has sort of used to have that communal experience when shows came out at the same time and you had to watch them together, and it was a water cooler, you know, the quote unquote water cooler experience of talking about it the next day, which is pretty much gone now, because even though most people will watch Stranger Things the weekend it comes out. Somebody will watch it a year later or 2 years later. Or
but everybody
whatever.
Else who's watched it has forgotten what it was, you know, specifically.
So you don't have that shared cultural experience with TV anymore. You get it with movies for big blockbusters. But comics still have that thing where every week most people are still reading it in the same way at the same time, at least in the same couple of days, you know, the same weekly period. So you, to me, the most fun about reading weekly is, besides coming on the show and talking about it with Josh, because that's personally the most fun, is the sense of anticipation about what's coming next, like what's going to happen next week. Mm-hmm. And then what are people going to say about it? What's the reaction going to be? There's the whole, you know, community aspect of it, which is the most fun.
Well, you get more time. I mean, and we're biased. We do this show in this format, and I hadn't really thought about it before, but I think that's part of the strength of this show is that we have a little bit of experience. We talk about it. A little while later, it comes back on, and then we get to see how it developed and see how our opinion on it has changed and see how that experience changes, you know, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the worse, you know, when something sticks the landing. But we've been talking about it for 6, 8, 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great sort of like long-term feeling. You have a chance to absorb that in a way. If we were just talking about a trade every month, if every show was a book of the month, it would not be the same thing.
It would still be interesting and fun. Yes. It's just a different kind of experience. You mentioned earlier, like, I'm much less of a weekly reader. Like, it, you know, if this all went away, I'd probably stop reading weekly. I'd probably just, you know, read collections and reread the stuff I have on my shelf. That's probably what would happen. But because then I wouldn't have the community, which for me comes out of the show. You know, I don't hang out on Twitter anymore, and I don't read the websites anymore. So for me, the community is the show. It's you. It's the listeners. It's the Discord channel. It's the Facebook group. And if it wasn't a weekly stuff to talk about, I'd probably just, you know, change my habits. I don't know that for sure, but that's probably what would happen.
No, I think that's definitely the case for me.
So there is a bit of a momentum in it. There's a bit of being in the community. There's a bit of the excitement of, you know, there's always the hope springs eternal aspect of what's going to come out next week. Maybe it'll be a really great comic I didn't anticipate being really great, and that'll be exciting. It's always discovering a book like, holy shit, this is great, or a random issue of a book that wasn't great before but was great now is exciting. So there's always that aspect of it too.
And I love that it's stretched over. My favorite stories are long form, you know, whether it's novels or, you know, a closed-ended long comic book run or, you know, a TV series, you know, like that's what I like best. And you get that with comics when they're done right, but you get to stretch it out over time. You know, it's like you can eat a giant meal all at once, but, you know, sort of have that in the in the house for a long time.
Let's say you had a lot of milk and you made a cake.
Uh-huh, right.
You could sit there and eat the entire cake in one night, and I probably did that when I was 18. But now you want to stretch it out. You want to get a good container to keep it moist.
I want to keep going back to that cake for a while.
Yeah, you want a piece of cake a day for like a week.
Oh, I had day cake the other day. I did. My mom had bought me a cake for Father's Day, It was like 1 p.m. and I was like, I'm gonna have some cake right now. And it was so luxuriant.
And so then he also asked, what do we miss? So at the time we weren't reading weekly books. We were doing the trade show because it wasn't weekly comics. What did we miss? I guess it's the same thing, but what do you like? It's the same exact. It's all tied up together.
I didn't mind the break.
No, it was actually kind of nice for a moment because when I thought about it, I hadn't had that break since I was 12.
Yeah.
And so it was off-putting at first, but then it was kind of nice. And it made me think that the economics don't work, but maybe there's a way to build in some sort of off season for comics, but like, obviously that would never happen. But it was kind of nice to recharge. You know,
That's a really good way to put it.
I was excited to get back to the books when they came out again, as opposed to sometimes it can feel like a slog. Like Greg said, it definitely can feel like anything that happens every week for decades can sometimes feel like a slog. That's just the nature of humanity. But it was exciting to get back to them when they came back again.
Yeah. I mean, the lulls in quality, you know, amplify the highs. I think on a given, I think you're right. Like on a given week, like it's the anticipation of like what's going to be great, what kind of surprise is there, what thing is going to continue to excite and fulfill. And I it'd be nice if there was more quality, but I very much doubt that Connor and I could keep doing this if we weren't able to feel the excitement from the really good stuff that comes in. I think that's
And people have in the past said, why do you guys do the show? You don't sound like you're enjoying comics. And sometimes we're not enjoying the particular specific books we're reading, but we're never not enjoying the experience. Mm-hmm. Even if we, you know, have a week where everything is bad, that's just the way it goes sometimes.
And I appreciate a good comic more now than I ever have.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. Like, I feel like I'm in a position to be able to appreciate so much about comics that I didn't before. And then also be able to be like, well, shit, that was fun. I don't even know if it was good. And that's good too.
But I also like the break that we got a chance to explore some collections that we hadn't before, mm-hmm. which is just something we don't have time for.
Yeah, that's true. That's
so it was nice. True. It was nice for that break. In addition to not being in the weekly grind, which we all say lovingly, be able to slow down and read some. I mean, we have the Books Blood show, but it really forced us to have every week to be like, okay, now what are we going to read?
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun too. So you know, it was all weird. That was a weird time, but right now we're past it. Looks the way things are going, it's entirely possible that may happen again.
Yeah,
where they have to shut down distributors again because of the virus, because it's coming back. So we might be back here in a couple of months where we're talking about trades again because there's no new books. Who knows? But
I can tell you one thing: we'll figure it out, and we will have a good time doing it. And
we'll talk about cake.
We could do that. We'll talk about cake, the snack. Then we'll talk about the band cake, and then maybe we'll. I tell you what, we won't do, and this is a promise: we will not eat cake on mic.
No.
No, we've learned from our experiences that that's a bad call.
Yeah. Although I did that show is on YouTube now, and I did watch a few minutes of it, and it doesn't sound as bad as I remember it sounding. But still, there was a show we did where we ate cookies, and that was a mistake. They were good cookies. Eating the cookies was not a mistake.
Did your mom make those cookies?
She did.
Your mom make good cookies.
She was catering then. It was not a good professional idea. It was a good personal idea. Anyway,
very good.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Lori.
And Stu, who wrote in but didn't get on the show, but we have your email, and you'll get on the show soon.
Yes, absolutely. Connor, what do we got? What's on the...
contact at ifanboy.com is how... If you want to get on the show and ask about things, existential crises in your comic... if you're still listening, I'm curious if anyone actually did stop buying over the break. Like, they're like, I'm done.
I could see stop buying and then unintentionally not buying again. I could see that. Like, yeah, I haven't done this, and I'm not really missing it. I think that's.
I'm curious to see what the sales numbers will look like going forward. Of course, we don't really know the real sales numbers, but I'm curious. Mm-hmm. Plus, Diamonds now won't have all the sales numbers. It's just interesting. I know that was the fear, was once the momentum broke, people would stop reading, and I'm curious if there was any measurable amount of that. But maybe we may never know. Anyway, contact@fanboy.com. So we put a show out just right before this one came out on the feed, Mediasplode number 4, That Thing You Do. The discussion about the Tom Hanks film, and also we talked about what we were watching, what we've been watching the last month, and also we talked a lot about Tom Hanks's career, which sort of happened at the end, which was fun. It was a fun show. It was delightful, as we like to say. And so check that out in the feed right behind this one, and right behind that one you can find Books Blow, Jack Kirby's New Gods, which we did last week, and that was fun too. We enjoyed that one. And next up for Books Blow is Pluto Volume 1. We haven't done manga in a while, so that's what we're going to do, Pluto Volume 1.
Apparently, you've got to read it backwards.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was looking at it yesterday, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get a headache, just because that's what always happens the first chunk of a manga I read, because my brain has to recalibrate how to read. But I'm looking forward to it. It's been
left-hand panel stacking, but it's okay.
It's been on my reading list for a while, so I'm very excited to talk about Pluto Volume 1. That'll be coming to you in August. In July will be Josh's next Talksplode.
If you want to go over to ifanboy.com, you can find all of those shows and podcasts and everything that is available. Every audio show we've ever done is definitely there. Almost. Not quite everyone.
There's actually one show where the audio is missing, and I don't know where it went. It's an old one.
Yeah, and most of the Make Comic stuff doesn't exist anymore either, which is kind of...
It's weird. I got to figure that out.
You can find out what the pick of the week is before this show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy, following @ifanboy on Twitter, and @ifanboycomics on Instagram, which I believe this week there'll be maybe some surprise about it, or at least I didn't know what it was going to be. There was no clue. It was kind of fun that way, which is what we were just talking about. The pick of the week. This one, you know?
Yeah. I thought you were talking about the picture of you on Instagram.
No, not the picture of me on Instagram, although there are some.
No, the one from on iFanboy.
Oh,
Josh.
God. I showed that to my wife. She was like, Jesus, what happened to you? I've never seen a picture of myself where I was like, you look too skinny. But that was it.
It was weird. I was, you know, preparing that video, that episode to put on YouTube, and I randomly clicked on the timeline, and that was the still image, and I was like, whoa. Yeah. So I grabbed the screenshot. Put it,
what Lindsay said immediately, she's like, was that right after you got sick? And I was like, yep. Because I got violently ill after WonderCon in 2008, the Darwin show, and I lost like 15 pounds in a very short amount of time, and that's that era.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't at the time.
You can also subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. That's where we've been updating with our old video shows as unlocked by the patrons. We do 3 a week. And this past week, as we mentioned, Josh talked about Green Lantern, one of the numbers. It was the pick of the week. That's the super skinny Josh mini episode. We also talked about the best comic book creative teams at that time and funny comic books. So those are all on YouTube right now. Next week, we have more stuff. It'll be fun. The week after that is the first ever barbecue email show.
If you like this show, you can write a review of it over on Apple Podcasts or whichever place that you'd like to write a review. You can scribble one on the Post-it and leave it somewhere as long as you're staying 6 feet away from people. Real 6 feet, too. Not this bullshit 4 feet that people seem to be doing. Seriously, thank you for everybody who does that. Leaves the star ratings, does all that stuff, or tells people about it on social media, wherever it is, passing the word around about the show or telling people they might like it or talking about it is always much appreciated. And thank you for doing that and for continuing to do it. That's right. I expect more. And that is it for the show.
Yeah, it is.
I'm Josh.
I'm Connor. Next week there's no new comics, so I don't know what's going to happen.
It'll be fine.
The human TR-808. D. Nice. The poet. The blast master KRS-1. The grand, incredible DJ Scott LaRock. Boogie Down Productions. Fresh for 86, you suckers.